Welcome to the SBS podcast sponsored by Zwift. It was famously used by Matt Heyman to prepare for his victory at Paris-Roubaix. You can use it too for your own goals. Visit Zwift.com to learn how to join the digital peloton today.
Hello and welcome to the Zwift Cycling Central podcast. I am Jamie Finch-Penninger and I am very lucky to be joined today by Anthony Tan and Rob Arnold. It's been a while since I saw you last, Rob. It's been a pity. We were just talking before. It's the summer of cycling that we last saw each other.
It could have been. It was a January, now we're June and we're back in the studio in Sydney and it feels quite foreign. But we used to do it quite a bit, so we could just sort of roll on as though we knew what we were doing.
Yeah, I mean, that's the general idea. Anthony, how are you doing?
Not too bad.
Saw you last week.
Yeah, so we don't need to kind of recap of what happened between last week and this week. Nothing much happened in my life.
There's been a lot of racing.
Indeed, and that's exactly what we're going to go on to talk about.
A little bit of politics, cycling politics.
A bit of politics. Where should we start? Okay, we'll start, since you brought up the politics, Chris Froome appears that he will ride the Tour de France. The UCI aren't going to ban him, according to Le Parisien. And ASO aren't going to ban him, according to Prudhomme. Both of them kind of shifting the blame, well, shifting the responsibility from one to the other before the Tour de France, but it appears that Froome won't be banned by either at this stage.
The ASO says the UCI, the UCI says the WADA, the WADA says take your time, and we're in at risk of losing three Grand Tours in a row. Should it be that cynical? Like, he's got to win the third, he's got to win the Tour.
Mm. Well, that's a discussion in itself, which we'll be getting to in a moment. Anthony.
However, if he are you saying he's going to be let off?
No, I'm saying that he will be riding the Tour under this current cloud of no decision having been made.
Oh, okay. Well, that's status quo then, isn't it?
So yeah.
That's why I said nothing's changed between last week and actually nothing's changed between last year when that came out and now.
No. And it's ridiculous. I wrote to UCI yesterday and just asked, why isn't there a time frame imposed on it? And the answer was, well, that's WADA's responsibility, which is what I mean by the UCI says, well, it's WADA. And then the WADA says, well, take your time. And then we just all sit around just sort of, and we find ourselves talking about that for the first time that we've spoken about cycling, you and I, in 6 months. And it's the first topic of conversation and we're no clearer than we were 6 months ago when we sat in front of David Le Parisien and said, what are you going to do?
And he said at the time that we were hoping for an expedited process in getting everything sorted as we sat in front of the Hilton Hotel in Adelaide. I remember that well.
Quite a day that was.
Yeah. Anyway, let's move on to some current racing news and possibly positive racing news. Richie Porte in yellow at the moment at the Tour de Suisse. BMC looking strong in support of him in that ambition to push for the top GC. Will he be doing the same at the Tour de France? I mean, I know what everyone in Australia wants to hear, Tanny. Are you going to be the naysayer on this or the a-sayer?
Well, I think it's really hard. I think with Porte has shown he's very capable in a one-week race. I think he's even said it himself. He still needs to prove himself across 3 weeks. I'm not saying that fifth in the 2016 Tour was an aberration, but I think I want to see. I think this is a really important tour for him to show that he's still got it. And it's I've sort of put him down as one of five guys I think can win the tour. So yeah, I'm giving him a good shot. But yeah, I mean, to say that, say, you know, how Sky dominated the TTT at the Dauphiné and then BMC at Swiss, I don't think that really tells us anything. We knew they were the strongest team time trial teams out there.
Mm. I think it's shaping up well for July. I think that I've put him on the cover of the official Tour de France guide, which comes out on Monday, by the way. Got that plug in, right, moving right along. I've got Richie, you know, in my list, I've put him down as the winner, and I've put Geraint Thomas as second. And then we actually did do a little bit of a predictions page in the tour guide this year, and there's a lot more variety because people don't know how the Froome thing is going to play out. I think there's some people banking on him not being there, and that could still be the case. But either way, we're talking about Richie in Switzerland, and he's doing very well, and I think he's just basically pacing himself to July. And it's a similar format to what we saw in 2017. where he did well at the Dauphiné in the lead-up to the Tour, and I think he'll arrive ready and ambitious. And as for the three-week quandary, we'll never know, because it's... Let's remember, he hasn't led a Grand Tour except for 2010, when he made his debut in the Giro. So that's quite a while ago. And but he's had a lot of experience since then, and he looks like a completely different person. Making the Tour guide, I looked at some images going through the years of Richie Porte, and he is, when you see him in the Saxo Bank colours, it's a different person. It's quite amazing, the physical changes.
Yeah. So I was just going to go back to that predictions page of yours. Was there any consensus or standout favourite from that?
Yeah, I was the only one who put Michael Matthews for the green jersey, and everyone else said Peter Sagan. It's pretty obvious, but I'd put Michael Matthews on a little insert on the cover as well, because, you know, it is the Australian edition. We are an Australian, magazine and Australian cycling media company, so I wanted to have that little bit of parochialism. But the one consensus is that Peter Sagan's going to stomp home, and if we can use Tour de Suisse as some sort of gauge, we can. It's interesting to see when Sagan's about, Matthews is there, and you know, it's an interesting mix. But we've also got Gaviria in the mix as well, so it's going to be interesting to see how that all unfolds.
Yeah, well, we'll come back to Matthews in particular for green, because that's the topic I do want to talk about. But a bit more on Richie for yellow. I mean, it's obviously been a different season for him. His climbing form has been a bit split up because he had a bit of sickness in February and March, and obviously the birth of his child recently. Congratulations, obviously, to Gemma and Richie there. But that's forced a different preparation. Normally he'd go to the Dauphiné, this time he's going to Swiss, which is a week later and a few stages longer.
He also wanted a bit of variety. I spoke to him a couple of weeks ago, and he was saying that the majority of the BMC team that's going to the Tour is the one that's at Tour de Suisse.
Okay.
Just
That makes sense, I suppose.
For the record.
Yeah,
I think that would be unsurprising though, Rob, because, you know, generally that core group does follow the leader in the important lead-up races. Probably, you know, still on Switzerland, but not at Swiss. For me, it was his, I think, third place overall at Romandy. That, for me, that was really important because of his the layoff that he had early in the year. So if anyone needed a result there, it was Richie Porte. And I think from that, because he's, you know, they talk about sprinters riding on confidence, but I think GC riders as much so. So for me, that showed positive signs that he would do a good Tour. And, you know, until his crash and thing on the Mont du Chat, you know, he was looking really good last year. So it felt like there was, up until that, disaster, it felt like there was going to be some progression. So it's quite easy to see him bettering fifth place overall, but you know, so much can happen between now and then. So yeah, just I don't know, what we've all gone over that crash so many times, but you know, just that one, just one little slip up, however you want to look at it, you know, can write off your whole Tour. So that's why Froome is so good, because he manages somehow to avoid a lot of those mishaps, which, you know, before other Tour contenders. Mm.
And it's a fair point, actually. I just want to come to you in a second, Rob, because you've been through all the stages of the Tour with a fine-tooth comb. The last time Chris Froome didn't complete the Tour de France and didn't win it was at the 2014 edition, where Nibali won, and he went out before the cobble stage. This time there's a cobble stage again. Is that a chink in the armour of Chris Froome?
Richie talked about it. Also interesting, there's a couple of things to consider. Richie's done the Dauphiné the last few years so that he could get a good preview of the Alps, and he thinks this year the Alps are crucial because, you know, there's key stages there, of course, there always are. But it's the first time in a while that we've seen the Pyrenees as the last mountain range, and he said that the stages there are incredibly difficult. But then just talking about his reconnaissance of the Tour stages, he hadn't done every single day in the Alps, but he's done the Pyrenean stages, and he's also done Stage 9, which is the day to Roubaix, and he said the cobbles are fair income cobbles. You know, I mean, that's not to say that they haven't been in the past. There was the cobbled stage in 2015 and 2014. 2014 was in mud, 2015 was in the dry, And they were little tasters, you know, around 25, 26 kilometres worth of cobbles. But this year it's about 50 kilometres worth of pavé. And he said it's really, really nasty. And he's of the belief that he just needs to conserve time, and I think that'll apply for all of the GC guys. But then you get a little bit of shadow boxing where Richie's saying, maybe we can even pinch a bit of time. So you can imagine that at BMC they are constructing a team where they're going to, you know, try and take time in the team time trial, try to take time in the cobbled stage with guys like Van Avermaet on roster. We know that it stands Richie in good stead. But we don't know exactly how it's going to play out for Sky either. Like, if we do look at the last little stanza of racing, we could consider Geraint Thomas a co-leader of Team Sky. He's certainly had a great Dauphiné. He won that in dominant style. And he has had a history on the cobbles, so I think that if you're trying to sort of talk about that part of the menu, of the itinerary, that Geraint Thomas is going to be someone to stand out of the GC guys when we go to Roubaix in Stage 9.
The other name certainly has to be Vincenzo Nibali, who made up a ton of time on that 2014 stage that you mentioned there in the mud and the rain. Can the shark bite again?
I don't actually rate him for the tour. I just feel as you mentioned, Jamie, you know, 2014, yeah, four years passed, and yes, he did a great Giro where he overcame Chavez, but I think the calibre of riders fronting up to this year's tour and the condition they'll be in is a different proposition. And also sort of on the cobbles, yeah, because the cobbles were included after 2014, we know that Froome fractured his wrist before, so he was already very tentative, and so that precipitated his spate of crashes the next day. So I think he's actually proven himself because the cobbles haven't been included in a subsequent tour, and I feel that I don't really see that as a point where the other contenders can make time on Froome, unless, yeah, he crashes previously, and then, well, that applies to all the other riders. I wouldn't say, what I'm saying is I don't think, say, Port or Uran or Bardet is in any better than Froome on the cobbles.
No, I think that's fairly evident from the past performances.
On that, you talk about Vincenzo. I mean, when you look, and you're talking about the discrepancies in people's predictions, I think it depends on where you are in the world. I mean, we're going to hone in on Richie because he's our Australian hope for GC. And I think that he's on equal footing with quite a few other riders around the world. But talking to Richie, his favourite, or the main contender for him, curiously, is Vincenzo Nibali.
Well, he's certainly got the pedigree, doesn't he?
He's got the pedigree, but he hasn't done a great deal after winning Milan-San Remo and then going and riding Tour of Flanders and the like this year. He had a pretty average Dauphiné. I don't really remember seeing very much
of him. Well, the thing is, Nibali used to be this guy who was consistent across the whole season. Then he had a sort of epiphany. He's like, well, I just need to be good at the Grand Tours. And ever since he's done that, he's won every single Grand Tour, and he's gone a lot worse in the other week-long stage races using his tune-ups. I think he's in a similar position to where he's been in the last few years, and I'm expecting a similar performance.
We can never rule him out. And there are stages where his strength on the downhill, and we've talked about it in the past, is going to stand him in good stead. But I would have liked to have seen a little bit more of him at the Dauphiné. Remember last year he was sort of in and out of the action. When he decided it was time to stop, he just basically sat up, and when he decided he was in contention for a stage, when he'd go crazy. We didn't see that from him this year. He basically seemed to roll around last week.
We'd talk about the other key aspects of the tour that are going to decide GC, and we're talking about time trialing kilometres, including the team time trial, and the kind of early mountains. It's going to be a very, very mountainous second week there in particular. How do you think, first of all, the team time trial and the time trialing? It's less in terms of kilometres than we've seen in the previous years. Who do we think is going to be benefited by the inclusion of those time trialing kilometres?
Well, yeah, you just have to look at, like I said earlier, Jamie, you have to look at BMC and Sky. It's going to create a different dynamic, because I think what it comes after seven... Is it the seventh stage or something like that at the tour? But it just means that, yeah, the other riders, teams like Aja Desert and whatever they're called now, Canada or DRAPAC, or Education First, you know, they're going to be on the back foot. So they're going to have to ride offensively as a result. I expect, you know, it was once, you know, that team I mentioned, Education First, they were once world beaters, you know, when they were in their previous guise. But I think now, you know, we can say that, you know, big money buys these ruler type riders who can do particularly well. So yeah, it just means like teams like Bardet's and Uran's will have to try and make up time, because I'm sure they will lose time on that day.
And Rob, you've been putting together the guide. I mean, that second week, have you ever seen anything like it? It's really concentrated quite early, and we'll see quite a lot of shake-up on the GC and quite a lot of big gaps going into that end of the second week there.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because there's all of the talk of the 65-kilometre mountain stage in the Pyrenees, which is going to be fascinating, and they're going to do a Grand Prix-style seating arrangement where you are on a pole position. And that could shake things up. For the first 20 riders, I think they get a grid position, and everyone else is basically nestled in the pack. There's no neutral zone, and it is going to be a little bit of innovation at the Tour in the Pyrenees. But there's also a 108-kilometre stage in the Alps, and that's finishing at altitude as well, I think, Rosière. And I don't know. The first 9 days are going to be quite long, but you know, for SBS viewers, that's going to be mixed pretty much with the Football World Cup. The stage to Roubaix comes on the eve of the first rest day, and that also coincides with the Football World Cup final. And that's going to, I think, impact on not necessarily the racing. I think the script has been pre-written so that it can accommodate the World Cup viewing times. And there's certainly, just for people who are planning their tour viewing, be aware there are a couple of stages which finish at 3:50 in France rather than 5:30. So there are some earlier evenings based on fitting in the schedule with the World Cup. That didn't answer any of your question. It's just throwing in a few things.
No, it's interesting facts, though. I like it, Rob.
Yeah. But what was the original question?
The climbing in the second week, how's that going to affect things?
I think, you know, I can't base everything that I think about the Tour on what Richie's told me, but I do think the Pyrenees is going to be key. And everyone that I've spoken to who has ridden the course for the time trial on the penultimate day down near Biarritz, they said, don't underestimate this. This is seriously hilly, difficult. Roman Sicard, who lives down there, has done some commentary for about that stage, and he's saying this is not just your typical time trial specialist. It's not like Tony Martin's going to go out and smash it. It's a GC rider's TT. And that, I guess the Marseille one last year was similar, but we also saw guys like Romain Bardet not coping very well at all with it, and maybe he's learned from his mistakes of not focusing on his time trialing ability. But to be frank, I've got the feeling that the TTT of stage three in Cholet, the team time trial of about 30 kilometres, is going to be more critical to the overall result than the penultimate stage.
Okay.
Yeah, I sort of have a differing view, just because if you look at the Giro's just passed, you know, it's the course sets the scene, but it doesn't make the race. The riders make the race. And what I think makes this tour really set up to be really intriguing is that, yeah, out of the top five guys, Port, well, for mine anyway, Port, Froome, Uran, we haven't even mentioned Quintana as well, Bardet, you know, these guys, they've, aside from Port, they've all, you know, and Froome is obviously won it four times. They've all finished second. So they're not really, you know, what made the Giro so good is that they all wanted to win. They didn't want to finish, you know, there was a group of guys who weren't interested in finishing second. And we saw that from Froome's audacious attack, you know, 3 days before the finish. So I think in a similar vein, these guys like Port, and even though Port hasn't finished on the podium, I don't think he's interested in finishing second. I think he thinks he's got a really good shot of winning it. So, the four contenders who are outside of Froome, and or if you include Froome as well, they want to win, and I think that will make the dynamic quite spectacular as we go into that final week, and particularly because of the team time trial, aside from maybe Port's team, okay, Movistar's got a good squad for doing TTTs, but I just feel that it's the course and the riders have been in a way has been set up to attack Froome a lot.
Certainly, can we talk about Adam Yates at this point?
We can jump into them, yeah. Rob. I'd agree with Tony. First of all, it's going to be one of the best races I think we've seen in a while in terms of a viewing standpoint, and hopefully we can drag some viewers across from the World Cup to the Tour de France this year. Obviously, that's the goal of the Cycling Central podcast here. But will we see a true battle? Because I think people will turn off if we see Team Sky just taking it to the front and, you know, going for either Geraint Thomas or Chris Froome, and the viewers will think, okay, we've seen this before. Do we need
definitely?
Yeah. Do we need like the tri-headed Movistar lineup to come in and go for it?
Yeah. Well, I think. I mean, you tell me. Did the eight riders make a difference at the Giro? I think it was a little bit of a different dynamic. You know, it does change it. It just means that you can't be like when Cadel won and they had Marcus Burkhardt because he was just such a strong workhorse. I mean, Burkhardt's just a fantastic teammate to have on side. But you can sort of put in that larger guy, let's say, on a climbing team, who can police all of the moves and be there on the cobbles. And when there's one less rider to choose from, it changes the dynamic just a little bit. Not enormously, but it's going to be a more interesting selection process, that's for sure.
And going to Adam Yates, who you mentioned before, with them having Caleb Ewan and Yates sort of sharing the leadership, how's that going to... I mean, it's hard to bring a team to support, you know, one GC guy, well, let alone a GC guy and a sprinter.
It never really works, does it? We've seen it time and time again in the past. We had Robbie and Cadell, and we've seen Eric and Jan Ullrich back in the day. And we're going to see it again with Tom Dumoulin and Michael Matthews. And I don't really know what's going to come of that. But it is, Sunweb is such an organised team. And I'm taking away from the Mitchelton Scott discussion. But there is always the temptation to try and chase the day-to-day headlines with stage wins for someone like Caleb Ewan or Michael Matthews. But then there's the bigger picture, where you're talking about Adam Yates having the potential to win the Tour. I think he could. I don't think he's that big personality, which is probably why he's shy of the headlines, because he's not really putting himself out there as someone who could win the yellow jersey, but he's got the pedigree and those brothers just go from good to better. They've got to give Caleb that shot at some point as well, don't they? So... either way, Australians have got plenty to tune in for. If you're talking about Richie or Caleb or Michael Matthews, even the workers are going to have an impact. Like, we're going to see more of Rory Sutherland. He's never ridden the Tour before, but it looks like he's going to be there as a chief domestique for Dan Martin, who's also coming into form. I think it's going to be a great Tour. There's a lot to talk about. And here we are on the 14th of June, basically doing our full gas Tour preview. And we haven't really discussed Dauphiné. We only touched on the fact that Richie's leading Tour de Suisse. But anyway.
Yeah, I think the whole setup of that dual-pronged approach can backfire for Mitchelton Scott and for Team Sunweb. I think, that's what the Giro show. Do they need to go all in for one objective? And Mitchelton Scott did that for Simon Yates at the Giro, and that's what works so well up until a couple of days to go. But I just think that's why I think Mitchelton Scott have made, you know, you wrote about it, Jamie, they've made no bones about saying they want to be a GC team. So I just think that, you know, allocating too many resources to Caleb Ewan, I think he'll be going in, you know, this is really a kind of an experience thing. Okay, he wants to win stages, but I don't think you can expect him to win five stages or something. I think if he wins one, that will be a success. And then for Dumoulin at somewhere, even though it sounds weird that he'll be going in for experience, but I think he will, because he's never gone in as a leader at the Tour de France. So I just feel that and then he's just done the Giro, and he looked pretty unlike Froome, he looked pretty worked over by the end of the Giro, as far as I could see. So I don't see him performing at a super high level for 3 weeks at the Tour.
I don't know. I don't buy all this stuff about experience. I mean, Dumoulin's been... He's been the leader at the Giro twice. He's been the leader at the Vuelta once. He's done very well in both of them. He's won stages at the Tour in the past. Caleb Ewan hasn't the four previous, you know, three, 4 seasons of his career all been about building experience so he can come to this stage and win races?
He's still only a pup.
Yeah, like, I know
he's been exactly. around for years, but he's still only 24.
No, 27 or something.
No, he's not 27. He's like 24. No, you're getting 24. Yeah. 24, 25, we'll call it. Okay. Anyway, but yeah, I think that's what the last 3 seasons of his career has been about, to get to this point where he can go in and win a stage of the Tour of France. They're not there just to make up the numbers with Caleb or to blood him or give him experience. They want to win stages.
Yeah, or Milan San Remo.
Anyway, this feeds into the green jersey battle that we're talking about a bit more. You had Matthews for green. I think everyone in the world has Sagan.
And it makes sense. Sagan will win it.
Yeah,
I just had to change it.
I actually looked at the course and went, it's possible that a pure sprinter could win the green jersey on this one, because there aren't quite as many intermediate stages where you'll see Sagan and Matthews right up there taking the win at the exclusion of the other sprinters. But the problem is, the other sprinters for me are too even at the moment. So like Gaviria, Ewan, Kittel, Greipel, Cavendish... I can't see one sprinter totally dominating all the stages at the moment. Kittel would be the closest because he's been so good in the past at the Tour de France and the other Grand Tours, but he hasn't been amazing this season. So, yeah, I mean, how do we see that green jersey battle forming?
Sorry, Jamie, I interrupt this podcast and just say that Tom Dumoulin is 27 years old?
We're talking about Caleb.
Oh, right. I thought we were talking about... Hang on.
He's just checked the Google and he's come up with an answer that we weren't even asking the question for.
Oh, okay.
For.
I thought
you've won the argument for... You've won the argument
I won a moot argument.
I did the Tour de France by myself last year and I had 2 arguments and they were both with myself, so I stopped them pretty quickly, and I think Anthony's just gone through a similar process.
Yeah, I won my argument that wasn't an argument.
Anyway, getting this back on track, guys, green jersey battle. What's going to happen, Rob? Tell us right now, please.
Well, I think the interesting difference is going to be Gaviria, because he's just so fast, he's so talented, we just don't know what to expect from him. The team basically should be built around him. That's Quick-Step. Flaws. And so I think he's an interesting mix to the equation. But I think Sagan, that there's enough sprint stages and there's enough catalyst for him to be chasing points at intermediates like he's done in the past. There's a new rule that's being introduced. It's called the bonus point. And it comes about 15 kilometres from the finish of the opening 9 stages. And there's no points on offer. It's a bonus point for sprinters or whoever's up the road to claim time bonuses. So it's the thinking behind it is to try and evoke a little bit of interest from the sprinters before just doing the lead out for the finish, and try and get them to split up some time bonuses and get some yellow jersey time. How that plays into the broader scheme of who's going to win the green jersey, I don't think it's going to factor that much. I think it's still going to be Sagan versus Michael Matthews versus Gaviria. And, you know, like, Kittel's going to be in the mix, but then I'm sort of going to throw my patriotic card in or parochial card in and say that I'd like to see Nathan Haas up in the top 5 as well. I don't see why he wouldn't be chasing the points where Matthews and Sagan do, even though Nathan's going to be doing the work for Kittel. Will Kittel reach the finish?
Well, the thing is, you've got to be up there in the bunch sprints as well, and Nathan's not going to be up in the bunch sprints because he's doing the train work.
That's it. So you have then, let's throw in Dylan Groenewegen.
Oh, yeah, good youngster there. He's right up there with Gaviria and Ewan in terms of the young sprinting cadre. Tanny?
Yes, I think Gaviria, for me, he's going to give Sagan he's a run for his money. I see him as his greatest rival. It's interesting because they haven't raced against each other that much, so it's hard to say how this battle's going. And if you look at the, if you just going back to the GC, they're all writing such different programs these days. I mean, if you look at the GC guys, they're doing, you know, 30 days or less leading up to the tour. It's not much, and then some, they're often writing different programs. So it's, for me, it's hard to say. You can only just go off what I've seen, and yeah, what from what I've seen of Gaviria, you know, he's like Rob said, he's so fast, he's so damn strong, and but so is Sagan, and Sagan has the experience of being at the tour in that position, and I think that's what will clinch him another green jersey.
Okay, well, I think that should halt our discussion on the Tour de France for the moment, but we'll come back after the break with more discussion about the local cycling scene.
Zwift has group rides for all levels. With a ride approximately every 30 minutes, you can join a group and ride that fits your schedule and your level. Group rides stay together behind a leader. They enjoy friendly banter, a relaxed vibe, a little bit of fun, and some friendly racing. Just like rides in the real world, except there's no worries about a rear-wheel puncher slowing the group down or being left behind. Check it out for yourself at Zwift.com today.
Okay, and we're back, and we'll talk a bit about the local cycling scene. And there was, I don't know, it's a mixture of news in the Australian cycling team, the track team, which will be going forward to the Tokyo 2020 Olympics. There's been a few riders ejected from that team. Probably most notably is Rebecca Wysak, the two-time World Individual Pursuit Champion, Jordan Kirby, who set the world record in and the second fastest time ever, wasn't it? Or was it the... Anyway, it can't be the world record and the second fastest time. One of the two in the individual pursuit. Rowan White, who'd already hung up the bike from what I've heard, and Nick Yalouris, who was a pretty important member of that team, pursuit squad team. In comes Lee Howard, Christina Clonan, and Macy Stewart. Rob, you've been publishing on this topic. And there was quite a lot of feedback on your comment board.
Really, you think that people aren't that interested in track cycling, and then something like this pops up. And one of the good things about it is that it got people talking about track cycling, if that's a good thing. I think it is. I think people should be using the velodrome wherever they can. And, I mean, I had some contact with Jordan Kirby on the day of the announcement. He was dreadfully upset. He actually went in and had four wisdom teeth removed. And as soon as he got
out... Because of the news?
Yeah, yeah. Just
he didn't even need them removed.
He was just like, oh, well, that was made me feel pretty miserable. I'll now go and make myself physically ill. And he got off the general anaesthetic and he called me and we talked about it. And he was surprisingly articulate for someone who'd just been through what he'd been through at the dentist. But he's... doesn't want to finish riding his bike, and he wasn't expecting it. It was completely out of the blue for Jordan and Rebecca and everyone, and I've had contact with a couple of them and spoke. I haven't spoken with Rowan, so I don't know his take on things. I know Nick Yalouris is stranded in the UK. He's living in a house on his own. He's gone to join a team over that was set up by Simon Jones, who's the head of the high performance program, or what's now called the Australian Cycling Team. And so Nick turns up in the UK in May. He gets a team. The idea was for him to race some crits and get some good hard summer miles in, and then come back in September ready to hit the track again and do what he does so well. I mean, here's a kid who's done a 101 kilometre. He's a superstar. He's been a world champion in the team pursuit. He's sent overseas to fine-tune his cycling capabilities. And then not long after he lands there, he gets a phone call. By the way, we're finished with you. Thanks very much. Pack your bags. We haven't got you a return airfare, but we don't know what we're actually going to do with you, but you're off the team. And, oh, by the way, there's support for you. There is a support mechanism. Here's some numbers that you'll call and some people will write and be in touch. Now, Simon Jones hasn't been in touch with Nick Yalouris. Jordan Kirby made it pretty clear that he had spoken to Simon Jones about it. The phone calls were made by Tim Decker to actually alert them of the fact, and there's been contact subsequently from other members of the Cycling Australia family. I know that we talk a lot about the well-being of people and athlete well-being, and it needs to be a big part of what's going on at the moment, because I think they need to be very careful with someone like Nick because he's just been, you know, he thought he had a career through to at least the Tokyo Games, and that's just the carpet's been pulled out from under his feet. Mm. And he's standing there not sure which direction to go. He's a bit lost. And the press release states that they're trying to give some after school care, some after athlete care to these people, but they're basically also saying you're no longer an athlete.
Yeah, well, that's the point. That's the point with this track cycling. It's very much do or die, because if you're not in the team, you're not getting any support, and there's not like you can go back and race professional track cycling, because that scene doesn't really exist outside of like the 6 days for a month or two at the end of the road cycling season.
No.
So it's really it's going to be the end of some of these cyclists' careers from here. I hate to say it. Jordan Kirby's got a ride with the local domestic team on the road, and he's an absolute beast. I'm sure he could go to a Pro Conti team if he wanted to. But Rebecca Wysak, I mean, she's 33 now. What does she do from here?
She's in limbo land, completely in limbo land. They were, up until last Monday, they thought that they were part of the Tokyo squad, at least the long squad, you know. I mean, and then suddenly it's all completely different. And Cycling Australia calls and they say, but Rob, why don't you talk about Macy Stewart coming back to the program? We can get to that. There's a couple of years now that she's on the roster, apparently, you know. We'll talk about Macy, but and I do think that there's some good feel-good stories and we shouldn't ignore those, but at the same time we can't just sort of accept that these four have just been flicked mid-season, no notice, very little, like, and only the promise of support. Like,
When should they be notified? It's now, what are we, June 2018, so 2 years out. So isn't it better to make that cut now rather than 12 months out?
Shouldn't there be a process in place where they say, right, what we're going to do is we're going to go through the 2018 season and we'll make a judgment call in September or whatever? Instead, there's just a random phone call in June. Well, one was expecting.
I mean, they do have contracts, and they do know when their contracts are up, so they know that these are subject to review.
Yeah,
so it's not completely out of the blue, but I agree that there could be better explanations around these things as well. I read in your piece, Rob, that Jordan was told that we don't think you're going to improve into Tokyo 2020.
Yeah.
And I'm like, does Jordan Kirby really need to improve? He is a phenomenal athlete.
Mm-hmm.
When you see him in person, when you see him riding amongst other cyclists, he's a step above. And I'm not sure that he necessarily got proper justification for the decision that was made.
My feeling is that they haven't spelled it out, but I would say that they don't think that he can sit the wheel like he needs to, and that he doesn't fit into the team pursuit format like he probably ought to. And there are guys like Sam Welsford and those who are beasts on the bike and ride a great team pursuit. And if the problem for Jordan is that they don't think that he fits into the formation, they have to say that. Don't just dance around the topic. Come out, tell us the truth. I want Simon. Simon Jones has offered a couple of little comments here and there, but he largely just sits in the background and lets the other people do the dirty work when he's in fact guiding the ship. And there's that many people
involved. I'll disagree a tiny bit there, Rob, because he's been happy to chat with me when I've asked for a comment.
He refuses to speak to me. So, okay. I mean, it's a bit difficult for me to make a comment about someone who refuses to speak to me.
Okay.
And it's because I said that it was embarrassment that they only sent four athletes to the World Championships. And he sat there like a child looking at me saying, I'm not going to talk to you anymore. You said I was embarrassing. Anyway, that was January. We're in June. We move on. But my feelings for Simon Jones are like they were all along. I think that he's been brought into a difficult position. He has to manage a remit that doesn't seem fair to me. I don't understand the obsession with the Olympics. It's an old theme for me. People are sick of hearing me talk about it, so I'll shut up.
Okay.
I just feel that, yeah, we talk about looking after the athletes when they've been cut. I think there needs to be some sort of, counselling or education to also understand the, just in general, the brutality of elite sport, because what about those guys who spend most of the year prepping for thinking they're on the tour team and they get cut and their season's gone awry? So it's not just in track cycling, it's the nature of elite sport. I'm not saying they should be left high and dry and then left to counsel themselves, but you know, this they need to be this is sport is a microcosm of life, and in life, not everything goes smoothly. You often get cut from things like jobs and so forth, being found redundant. I mean, there's no counselling offered there. You know, you have to seek out your own sort of salvation, if you like. So it's more for, I think, yeah, it's part of athletes understanding they can't just be housed in cotton wool for their whole lives. That's just not how life works. And I think it's perhaps a good lesson to learn that, yeah, just because you're strong and you're fast doesn't mean you always stay on the team. There might be reasons. What I will agree with Rob is that, yeah, they need to say exactly what those reasons are, why they have been cut, because then people can understand, oh, okay, it's for this reason.
Mm. Well, congratulations to the riders who did make it onto the team, obviously. Christina Clone and Macy Stewart. Absolutely. And Lee Howard. I mean, they are very good athletes in their own right, and up-and-comers, especially amongst the women there. You know, Christina Clone and Macy Stewart have been knocking on the door for ages and taking some really good results, so that is very much deserved. Okay, final thoughts before we leave this podcast for this week. Rob?
Everyone's been used to the Christophe Maé nice 30-minute pods, and we go for, what, 50 minutes. But final thoughts? Go on, ride your bike. Sun's shining. It might be raining once in a while, but get out there anyway. It's been a busy time for me, and I've got a couple of weeks before the tour, and I can't wait to ride my bike a little bit in that time.
I'll say don't worry about this whole Froome doping case. Just enjoy the tour for what it is. Just enjoy it for the spectacle, and then you'll have a good time.
It's funny advice coming from a critic, isn't it, Tony? I mean, enjoy it in the moment and don't look back.
Just look at it as a... I mean, because you can't do anything about it. That's what I'm saying. Like, there's no point, and there's no point looking at forums and so forth saying someone knows exactly what's going on. The only person who knows what's going on probably is Chris Froome, his wife, and maybe Dave Brailsford, and anyone who claims that they know he's on this or that is probably lying.
Okay, and we'll be putting you back into the very competent hands of Christophe Maé next week, or next fortnight rather, just before the Tour de France. Obviously, he's been doing very good work over in France at the moment, getting that interview, that scoop with Christian Prudhomme recently. But it's bye from us in Sydney for the moment, and we shall see you soon.